This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It is episode 334. I'm going to go ahead and turn the air conditioning on. What little air conditioning I have in my little broken down car. It's been an interesting couple of days weather-wise because we had a cold front come through. Which is really fascinating in the middle of August, because August is typically our warmest month here. And so, when was it? Yesterday evening, I wandered out yesterday evening after work, and it was easily 15, maybe even 20 degrees cooler than it normally is on an August evening. And then this morning, about the same thing, and I had breakfast with a buddy this morning, and so I got out of my car, and I definitely could have used a little jacket. It was fine, but I could have used a little jacket. And he came in on his motorbike. And when he came in, I said, "Hey buddy, it's a little cool for a motorcycle, isn't it?" He said, "Yeah, I had to break out the winter stuff." So as opposed to right now, which it's actually a little warm right now. I mean, it has bounced back. It was, it had to have been maybe in the 65-ish area, somewhere in there. But it's up to 78 now, but the sun is shining. And of course, my car has been sitting in the sun all day, and the air conditioner is working. It's working, and by the time I get home, maybe it'll be doing good. Although I might be out of air conditioning coolant stuff, so we'll see. I may have to crack the windows a little bit, or I'll just sweat. Sweating is good. So anyways, as I said, I had breakfast this morning. I had a good breakfast with a buddy, and have I had any other breakfast or lunch or anything? No, that was it. That was it this week. But it's been a good week. Got a lot of good things accomplished for my major client. We've got several balls in the air simultaneously, but we made progress, I think, on all fronts. In addition to the fact that there were other pieces in play on previous projects that I had worked on, and so I assisted on some of that stuff. And so it's been good. We've been able to get a lot of good things accomplished. Didn't quite get as much as I wanted to get done this week on the particular project that I'm focusing on. I had a comparison functionality that I was trying to put together, because one of the big problems of complex systems is not understanding and not being able to predict the effect of cascading changes. So when you have big complex systems, everyone starts getting paranoid, because if you think, well, I've switched these three things and I think I know what the impact of these three things are, but when we actually do this, is it going to iterate out to other things that I'm not expecting? And that causes the paranoia. That paranoia causes reticence. That reticence means that maybe you don't make the changes that you think you should. And then you start writing things on sticky notes and, pressing them up against your monitor so that you can remind yourself of things. I'll just take care of that, as opposed to letting the system do it. So I worked through all the major hurdles of getting this comparison system going this week, in between all the other things I did. And it seems to be working, but because I had so many other little things to do, I didn't get as far on that this week as I wanted, but that's okay. It's okay. It'll get done. And at this point, it looks like it will be worth it. Sometimes you think, oh yeah, that'll be great, and then you get working on it and you decide it's not nearly as useful as you thought it was going to be, but it has come together enough at this point that the bones of it are in and it's looking good. So that's cool. because pretty much the whole time I was working on this, I was like, oh, Jesus, oh, Jesus, oh, Jesus. I hope I'm not wasting their time. But it's forming up. It really is forming up and taking shape nicely. So that's good. The other thing that's forming up and taking shape nicely is, at least I think so, is the third book in the Windfall series. I had scheduled to be finished with the rough draft by September 15th. So that I could have the beta out by October 15th. In fact, if all goes well, I may have the rough draft finished by Monday morning, this coming Monday morning, which will be, what, the 24th or something like that, 23rd of August, which means I'm about 3 weeks ahead. And the book is actually longer than I expected it to be. So I've made good progress the whole time through, and I think it's fine. It will definitely not be what people are expecting, but giving people what they expect isn't necessarily my forte, and it's not necessarily what I try to accomplish. Because I choose not to give people what they expect, but I choose to tell the story that I'm trying to tell, and to do it in the way that I'm trying to do it. So, you know, that's fine, but I think the book hits on all the cylinders that I'm trying to hit on. It has humor in it. It has some emotional moments in it. It moves the plot forward. It increases the tension. It raises more questions than it answers, because we're very, very early in this story. And so it is the time to raise questions, not necessarily answer everything. And what is left now for me to do on it is just to get the epilogue done, which, as you may recall, the epilogues on these books are supposedly where I ring the emotional bell, at least for me. You know, it's interesting because in the last book, I have a buddy who I had another couple of emotional sections, and he actually was more impacted by an earlier one than he was by the epilogue, but he isn't a father yet either, and especially a father with daughters. You know, I really rang the bell when you've got fathers who are my beta readers who have daughters. That was the one where I was really going for, and it worked out well. So this one, I think, is also going to be a situation where if you have children, it will resonate more with you than if you don't. But it's, I think it's going to be okay. You never know till it's on the page, but the pieces seem to resonate and the idea seems to resonate. And again, it was one of those things that I thought it was going, I got the idea for what I wanted to do for the epilogue, and I thought, oh yeah, okay, that'll be good, that'll be intense, it'll be, you know, has the potential, and it has the potential to be emotional, blah, 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 blah. And then, in the midst of that, suddenly the idea popped into my head that you really need to tell this story from a different perspective and from a much younger perspective. And so this idea of telling it from a child's perspective popped into my head, and then it was like, oh yeah, this is gonna be good. Because then it started invoking all kinds of remembrances and images that I had from the Philippines, of spending time there and the children there, and specifically the children beggars there, and the emotional content that there is in seeing children in distress, and yet when, even when they are in their own distress, sacrificing their needs to meet the needs of others, and that whole context. I mean, it's rich, and there's a lot to pull from, and a lot to, pardon the use of the word, a lot to exploit. So I'm looking forward. I got a little bit of review and a little caught up because I wrote the end of the last chapter last night. Got to go back and review that, do a little editing, but then launch into the epilogue. And, you know, I expect to get started with that. I don't know if I'll get started tonight, but I expect to get started on Friday. And then I have Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So it's my good block of time to write. And I plowed through a lot of words last Saturday and Sunday. Just those 2 days alone, I put down almost 6,000 words. Because it was right in a scene. It was an action scene, and, you know, exciting scene, fun scenes, and it was wrapping up towards the end of the book, and it was pretty easy to plow it in. So, anyways, this will be fun, and then, you know, then it'll be rough draft, or be editing for the next several weeks, and then working on the cover, and then ordering the beta copies, and getting them mailed, and hopefully, at this point, I'll get everything wrapped up by October 1st, and then it's time to sit down and start hauling through the next one, and I just sort of know where I'm going, but not for sure. But, you know, we'll just go forward and see what happens. Because I know where the hockey puck is supposed to be going. I know where the net is at the end of this octet. And this next one will be the first half of the first octet. And so I just have to keep moving the hockey puck down the ice. Little bit here, little bit there. Keep it going in the right direction. Get to the conclusion. And I know what the conclusion is supposed to be, but it's going to have a lot of pieces in it that I don't see coming at this point, because everything just starts getting richer. So it'll be fun. It'll be fun. This week I had several different things that I had marked and made copies of, but I came across an article. Societal changes just fascinate me, and specifically the impact of technology on societal changes. Really interested to see what the long-term impact will be on my grandkids of technology. One of the things that surprised my wife this week is my daughter started going to kindergarten this week, and my daughter picked up Clara from school on Tuesday to bring her home, have her for a little bit before mom came and picked them up. And out of those conversations, my wife found out that Clara is in computer class 3 days a week in kindergarten. And that really shocked my wife. But that is where we are, frankly. Probably will be 5 days a week soon. Probably soon they'll all be issued tablets. I know that's happening in some schools already, or laptops, and they will just be joined at the hip. So technology is an interesting thing, because it makes options available that were not previously available. It makes knowledge available that was not previously available. But it does not necessarily improve things. And I think this is a classic example of simply have been faster, simply having more, simply being more self-serving is not actually better. The article that I came across was attempting to do some preliminary, maybe not preliminary analysis, but some analysis at this point of the effect of the new dating applications. Not necessarily the ones where you go and you fill out a big survey and you do this and that and the other and then people respond and not even stuff like that. We're talking about the new stuff like Tinder, where you basically put up a picture of yourself, little bit of info, and then you just look through a whole list of suggestions and you go, yep, nope, yep, nope, 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 yep, yep, nope, 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 nope. And then if you both go, yep, yep, then you can send a message to each other. It's very fast, lots of options, lots of potentials. And the name of the article was Tinder and the Dawn of the Dating Apocalypse. And it's not just Tinder they're talking about. There's a whole bunch of spin-offs that are like Tinder, where it's just easy, binary conditions, yes, no, and it's fast. But the elements, I think, that this article is really talking about is having a wide variety of potential contacts, having a method for sorting through them rapidly, and having a method for quickly determining whether or not this is something to pursue any further. With the emphasis on all of this being a multitude of choice and speed of acquisition, we'll call it. Because I think you'll find the type of side effects that this article discusses in any environment where there are multiple targets and rapid acquisition. And so this article goes through a lot of conversations, and I cut my notes down because when I took the article and pasted it in, it was 23 pages, at a decent size font. And so by the time I get my highlighting on, I just had to go through and cut out a bunch of pages because a lot of it was the same thing over and over, really structurally. The author of the article, her name was Nancy Jo Sales. She was trying to do a very balanced view and a more exhaustive view, but a lot of it was the same principles over and over. And you see the same type of mindsets coming from the men in one case, and then a different but similar mindset among the women in the other case. And in reading it, it just seems to me that these mindsets that are being applied to this environment of lots of potential targets, manifold targets, and the ability to do rapid acquisition, I think the kinds of reactions that are detailed in this article are quite predictable. With an understanding of the flesh, and then really with just an application of what is the basic physiological differences and emotional and psychological differences between men and women. I think this is all easily predictable. So, she starts by talking about men and women and, in bars in New York, everyone has their phone out, everyone is Tindering. Oops, sorry about that. Got a little too close to the side of the road. Everyone is out Tindering, so they're all got their heads down. They're doing their phones. They're swiping right, left, blah, 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 blah. She comments that one woman, comments, ew, this guy has a dad bod, you know, and this woman says of a potential, and she's swiping left, which means she doesn't want to do it. Her friends smirk, not looking up. Tinder sucks, they say, but they don't stop swiping. Then she starts talking about guys, and, you know, the guys are saying, well, you know, guys view everything as a competition. Who slept with the best, hottest girls? With these dating apps, he said, you're always sort of prowling. You could talk to two or three girls at a bar and pick up one, or you can swipe on Tinder a couple of hundred people a day. The sample size is so much larger. It's setting up two or three Tinder dates a week, and chances are sleeping with all of them. So you could rack up 100 girls you slept with in a year. And some of these guys call these girls Tinderella, because humans have a propensity for making up cute names for things. And, you know, the guys are always talking about, oh, yeah, so-and-so, he's so good at this because he can swipe and he can just text and, you know, get girls into bed. I mean, it's so fast, you know, and you don't have to spend much money on them because you can just, like, you know, blah, 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 blah. And really, these guys, you can tell this is all just find the available pool of potential people I can have sex with and just churn through that pool until you find someone who's willing to have sex, and then go have sex with them. And they talk about how that, you know, maybe a lot of the girls that they're hooking up with are really hoping that it's going to turn into something different, but that's not really what they want. And some of the guys will actually be honest about it and tell the girls that. And some of the other guys, you know, won't. They'll, like, pretend, like, well, maybe it'll lead to something else, you know, just because they want to get them in debt. And research scientists, they recognize that this is different. One of them, named Justin Garcia, a research scientist at Indiana University's Kinsey's Institute for Research in Sex, Gender, and Reproduction, says, we are in uncharted territory. He said there have been two major transitions in homosexual mating in the last... moment, I'm getting my mail. So there's been two major transitions in homosexual mating in the last 4 million years. He said the first one was around 10 to 15,000 years ago in the agricultural revolution, when we became less migratory and more settled, leading to the establishment of marriage as a cultural contract. And in that case, again, what you happened was an increase in the potential pools, because you're no longer just with your little tribe just wandering around in the desert or out in the wasteland somewhere or up in the mountains. Now you're gathering together and larger groups of people are getting together. And now how do you cement that? And one of the ways that that gets cemented is with a marriage, you know, where people are setting up shop together and bringing their own various functionalities to the marriage. So, according to this person, that was 10 to 15,000 years ago. And he said the second major change that has come along has been this rise of the internet. So I'll just quote a little bit. People used to meet their partners through proximity, through family and friends, but now internet meeting is surpassing every other form. It's changing so much about the way we both act, both romantically and sexually, Garcia says. It is unprecedented from an evolutionary standpoint. As soon as people could go online, they were using it as a way to find partners to date and have sex with. In the 1990s, it was Craigslist and AOL chat rooms, then Match.com and Kiss.com. But the lengthy, heartfelt emails exchanged by the main characters in You've Got Mail seem positively Victorian in comparison to the messages sent on an average dating app today. A girl, Jennifer, 22, a senior at Indiana University in South Indiana University Southeast in New Albany, she says, "I get a text that says, 'Wanna F.'" That's it. She said, "They'll tell you, 'Come over and sit on my face,'" says her friend Ashley. It all has to do about with this compression of the space and time between meeting and hooking up. And in that compression, there is an inevitable consequence. And the phrase that comes out of this is "hit it and quit it." Some of this is a little earthy, so bear that in mind. Amy Watanabe, 28, the fetching tattooed owner of the sake bar Satko, she says, "The men in this town have a serious case of pussy affluenza. We've seen them come in with more than one Tinder date in one night." Now, she goes on in this article, the author of the article, to say that there was a study that came out that said millennials were actually having less sex than other people were. But when you actually start digging under their research, some of their stuff was said their analysis was partly based on projections derived from a statistical model, not entirely from direct side-by-side comparisons of the number of partners, sex partners reported by the respondents. And then the people who put out the study and said, "Well, all data and studies are subject to interpretation. That's just the nature of research." In other words, they didn't do their research very well. And when she starts talking to women in this article, they will say things like, "New York guys, from our experience, are not really looking for girlfriends. They're really just looking for a hit it and quit it on Tinder." Another one says, "People send really creepy stuff," except she doesn't say stuff on it. She said, "Send me nudes." That's the first thing these guys are texting. After you say, "Oh, I like you, send me a nude picture of yourself," you know. Or they say something like, "I'm looking for something quick within the next 10 or 20 minutes. Are you available?" "Okay, you're a mile from my, you're a mile away. Tell me your location." She said it's straight efficiency from a guy's point. She said there's another woman says there's no dating, there's no relationships, there's rare. You can have a fling that could last like 7 or 8 months and you can never actually call someone your boyfriend. Hooking up is a lot easier. No one gets hurt while not on the surface. And all of them gave a wary laugh. You know, and in the midst of this, I mean, there is a description that I cannot use of the type of young man who sleeps with women without any intention of having a relationship with them. He's a womanizer, especially a calloused one, as well as a kind of loser. The word has been around, the word they use, which I can't use, has been around for at least a decade with different meanings. It's only in about the last year that it has become so frequently used by women and girls to refer to their hookups. And one of these gals was asked, "So what percentage do you think of young men are these type of guys?" And she says, "Oh, 100%. And someone else chimes in and says, "No, it's like 90%. I'm hoping to find the 10% somewhere, but every boy I've ever met is one of those." And then, you know, the guys start chiming in and they start saying, "Well, women do exactly the same thing the guys do. You know, they play the game. They just want to hook up. They're always looking for somebody better. They want somebody with more job, more, you know." And she said a few women actually do admit to the fact that they use the dating apps as a way to get free meals. One gal said, "I call it Tinder food stamps." So she just swipes through and makes a guy think she's going to sleep with him so that he'll buy her a meal. Okay, well, there you go. Um, You know, and without getting too graphic, the article then goes on to talk about how women talk about orgasms and how that there's no relationship. You know, the sex that they're having in all of this hooking up really isn't very satisfying. That they are rarely satisfied. That they know the guy doesn't care anything about them. And when you go and you listen to all this and you read through it, you know, you're starting to think, well, okay, what are you getting out of this? And some women in this will say, well, sometimes I just want to hook up. But I don't really think that's true. I don't really think that's true. You know, and she does quote Christopher Ryan, one of the co-authors of Sex at Dawn, how that human beings are not sexually monogamous by nature. This book, she says, contends that for much of human history, men and women have taken multiple sex partners as a commonly accepted practice. But the thesis is controversial and widely criticized by anthropologists and evolutionary biologists. And even though it was, it didn't keep the book from selling because people like this idea. In this age of feminism, in this age of women standing on their own two feet, in this age of the independent woman, this idea is purported that, in fact, women are just like men and they like their independence just as much as men. But I would submit to you that I do not believe that's true. And I do not think that's really what's going on. Because if it was really what was going on, in this article, the woman would have been able to find, the woman doing the article would have been able to find plenty of women who would have said, man, Tinder's great. Anytime I want to get a hookup, I just do this thing. And that's because that's what the guys are all saying. They're like, I can have two or three women a night, you know. The women aren't saying that. The women are talking about their dissatisfaction. The women are talking about how the experiences leave them cold. So why do they keep doing it? Because women, and even some of the men talk about how the experiences leave them cold. But the vast majority of men just say, this is great, you know. Why? Because men and women have a different approach to physical intimacy. Men are trying to spread their seed as much as possible, and physical intimacy is an end, not a means. So once they have their physical intimacy done, hey, I got that done for the day. Ta-da! Ready to do it the next time. Women, sexual intimacy, physical intimacy is a means, not an end. It is part of a relationship. You know, guys, 15 seconds, 30 seconds, minute, 2 minutes, just physically. Ready to go, got it done, boom. Women, in general, on average, vast majority, do not amp that fast. And if they stand a fighting chance of amping that fast, it's got to be with some sort of artificial stimulation. And even with artificial stimulation, they do not amp that fast. They just don't. Men and women are different. So inherently, it takes a woman longer and takes greater care from her physical partner for her to achieve a satisfying physical sexual experience. It just does. Where guys are wham bam, thank you ma'am, and now I'm rooting in the fridge to get something to eat. So what is the entirely predictable result of environments that put together great numbers of potential quote-unquote targets and ease of acquisitions. This environment is far better going to serve men than it's going to serve women. Because the fact of the matter is, there is a drive in women to seek relationship much stronger than there is a drive in men to seek relationship. And as soon as you increase the potential pool of targets, what happens is the men go, yep, yep, nope, 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 yep, yep, nope, 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 yep, 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 yep. Hey, you want to get together? You're a mile away. You want to do it right now? Yep, yep, no, no, no. And eventually they'll find a woman who's had a bad day, who is hoping that something is going to turn into something. Eventually they'll find a target that will be willing. And they'll go have their hookup, and then the woman will talk about, oh, I had a hookup, and everybody will go, oh, did you meet? Yeah, I met somebody, you know. And then all the women who didn't have the hookups will be like, oh, I haven't been with anybody in a really long time. And they'll get frustrated. And then the next time it's, yep, yep, yep. Hey, you want to do something? Yeah, sure. You know, I just want to feel like I'm connected to somebody, even if it's just for a moment. And so women end up getting involved in experiences that are not satisfying them, simply because they don't want to be left out. And simply because, in my opinion, there's a fear if they never have any experiences, they're never going to meet somebody. And so they just resign themselves to the fact that they are going to go through all of these hookups, and maybe there's a chance, maybe, that they'll meet somebody. But nobody can tell me that this is satisfying for women, or that this creates an environment that is conducive to the formation of real relationships. This is just rutting and people just using each other to either satiate their fear for the moment or to take care of their momentary lust and reduce it. That's all this is. And the more availability there is, and the faster the rate of acquisition, the more that is going to permeate as the standard mode of behavior, because it's highly destructive to the spirit and the soul and the emotions. And this is just nothing more than the flesh having a heyday. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.